Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hi, it's the Team Talk. I'm Josh Sexton. Jurgen Klopp has just held his pre-Aston Villa press conference, and joining me to react to that are Ian Ryan, Fuad Hassan and Sean O'Donnell. There was obviously a lot of Steven Gerrard chat when Jurgen Klopp first sat down for his press conference, said there'll be no Steven Gerrard questions today, but the journalists obviously didn't listen to that and proceeded to make 90% of the press conference all about Steven Gerrard. So we will, of course, get stuck into some of that. We'll also come on to talk about Fabinho, because there was a little question about him, and it's a good jumping off point for us to not talk about Steven Gerrard for a bit. We'll then go to Ben Anderson for the opposition view, who I'm sure will tell us all about Steven Gerrard. Aston Villa, and then we'll do team selection and predictions in the third part of the show. I'll come to you first, Sean, because it was quite funny, really, wasn't it? And Jurgen Klopp seemed in a good mood to sort of answer these questions, and there was a lot to take from it, really. I particularly sort of liked the way he was addressing the Gerrard to Liverpool sort of future, because I think we all think that's just a done thing, and maybe to an extent it is, but I just love the way that Jurgen Klopp sort of addressed it, because he was like, look, yeah, Steven Gerrard might get the job in the future, but he still needs to come here and win things. It's not just, you don't just get it on sentiment and all that kind of thing, you have to get it on merit. And I think that's, you know, Steven Gerrard would accept that as well.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. He didn't pull any punches, did he? He just they said something like, do you think Gerrard will eventually be the manager at Liverpool? And he was like, definitely. I was like, oh, fair enough. But no, he was funny the way he said, talking about, you know, managers have to win trophies elsewhere before they come to Liverpool. He said, that's not really important in his eyes. It's important that you win trophies when you're at Liverpool, which I think was good. But Klopp seemed in a really good mood, to be honest. He was joking about it at the start. And then, you know, as you said there, when they asked him about Fabinho, he was almost like thanking the journalist, wasn't he? Because they were talking about, you know, his own players. So, I thought Klopp was great. I thought he answered the Gerrard questions with almost like he was buttering Gerrard up a bit. I feel like Gerrard's probably sitting there watching that thinking, oh my God, he's proper gone for me there. Like, you know what I mean? So no, I thought he was brilliant.
I like the idea, Phil, that it's like bordering on needle the way that he's talked about Steven Gerrard and that, because like he's been so nice about him, and Steven Gerrard's sort of like mantra all week has been, I'm just going to avoid any sentiment around this game. I'm just going to go in there and do a professional job. And then Jurgen Klopp's just gone, oh yeah, I love Steven Gerrard. Everyone loves Steven Gerrard here. We're all going to have a lovely time.
Yeah, you know, Steven Gerrard sat back watching that and is probably shivering at it, just because he's not a player who, you know, when he was playing, he wasn't a player who liked to be talked about like that either. You know, he's very much the task at hand, and I expect the same on Saturday. I think even, you know, he said in his own press conference, Gerrard, that he doesn't expect the Anfield crowd to be, you know, singing his songs through the 90 minutes, and you know, I don't think we do either. So the, you know, Klopp sort of knew, I think, going in that he was going to get loads of questions. You could tell from his tone quite early on that he was just sort of going to pan them away as honestly and as bluntly as he possibly could. And yeah, it was a good little watch, wasn't it?
Yeah, Ian, I particularly enjoyed the sort of the quote around Steven Gerrard, sort of, you know, shrugging off the sentiment from Jurgen Klopp here. He said, Steve, you'll probably have no idea how it'll feel when he steps in the stadium. I had it in a similar way first time back at Mainz and back at Dortmund with LFC. I've never heard a negative word about Steven Gerrard. I think Steven is probably being a bit naive, thinking that there's going to be like no reception for him at Anfield. I think when he comes out, he'll quite quickly realise, and we've seen it with past managers before, when, you know, Julio's come back and Benitez come back, that Anfield can sort of make it that before the game and after the game, but, you know, during the 90 minutes, he's not going to get any favour, I don't think.
No, 100%, and that's how it has to be, unfortunately. So I think you're right to say you'll probably get the clap and the ovation when he comes out, and then it ends there, Josh, for me. Take the sentiment out of it. As Gerrard said himself, And then maybe it becomes a thing if Liverpool have got the game wrapped up and it's a 3-0 or something like that, and maybe one or two songs break out. But this is a massive game, and the story leading into it is all about Steven Gerrard, and you understand that to some extent given what he did as a player. But I want the narrative to be very much about Liverpool's performance after the game, hoping it's going to be another really kind of resounding performance, really, where we've taken this team apart, because we look superb at the minute. I mean, it's hard to kind of find the words sometimes. I mean, even when they go to Milan midweek, you're thinking, well, it's a scratch team. The best he might do is a draw, maybe, given that Milan have got everything to play for. Liverpool have got nothing to play for. It's all about kind of just conserving energy, wrapping players in cotton wool. Obviously, it's a slightly stronger team than maybe some of us thought, but it's another win ticked off, and we go into this weekend flying into it.
Yeah, absolutely, Sean. And you imagine the players will be professional about this as well. That's sort of almost one of the blessings. This, look, we expect Jurgen Klopp to lean into sentiment in the way that he has done today. We expect, you know, us as fans and the Anfield crowd in general to receive Stevie warmly. But, you know, those players on the pitch, as much as I respect Steven Gerrard for his Liverpool career and all those things, all his achievements, they're still just going to play Aston Villa and what's in front of them.
Absolutely. I actually think this plays a lot more into our hands than into their hands, because yeah. I think all those players... You know, you think about when Milner, when we won the European Cup in Madrid, first thing he did was put six up to the crowd. I think Klopp's drummed that into him. Go and create your own history. So Gerrard, who is the biggest figure of our recent history coming back, they'll want to show him. They'll want to show. I think you can see it in Klopp's eyes as well in the press conference. He's almost sort of laughing to himself, thinking, wait till we let ourselves loose on you. Wait till you see what we can do. Because, listen, Gerrard was obviously, he is obviously a legend at our club, but the history we've created since he's gone is all right as well, do you know what I mean? I'm really looking forward to it, to be honest. I think it'll be a great occasion, as Ian says, let's give Gerrard a good reception at the start, but as soon as that whistle goes, that's it then. It's like, let's show Gerrard the new Liverpool, you know what I mean?
I'll come back to you on that, because there's a good point you made there, and I think Klopp has sort of referenced this in the past about the idea of not, you know, respecting history, but not carrying history in our backpacks and not sort of carrying that weight of history. And Gerrard was obviously, you know, a Liverpool player who carried a lot of the weight of Liverpool's history in his backpack, and it sort of wore on him at times. But that's been one of the big things Klopp's emphasised with all the players who've come through, is that there is that respect for history, and as you say, you see it with James Milner, but none of them carry it and none of them necessarily feel that way, apart from maybe Jordan Henderson.
I think we've broke well free of that now. I think you look at, you know, every player across the board, even like, so players who would come in and you'd expect them to have that backpack on, they're the senior players now. So they can say to the young players that are coming through, or whoever's in the squad, listen, we've got our own history there. We are by far, and they're probably not saying this, but they are by far the best Liverpool team of recent history. You know, better than all the teams Gerrard played in, and Gerrard will probably admit that himself. You know, I think he has admitted that. So get the Gerrard thing out the way early, and let's show them what we can do.
Absolutely, Fuad. And there's obviously a lot of sentiment attached to this. I think that's, you know, you wouldn't be a human being if you didn't sort of understand the sentiment attached to this. And that'll be the case, you know, if there's Steven Gerrard being touted for the Liverpool job in the future, it'll be the case probably every time he comes to Anfield, because he is such a legend of a player. And I think that's one thing that you can't sort of get away from. And it's why I was quite pleased today that Jurgen Klopp did just sort of lean into that a bit more, and he wasn't shying away from it, and he talked about Steven in those terms, because I think he knows better than anyone in the manager he is that he's not going to be able to ever sort of shed that. And obviously, as I said before, he wants to have that respect for the history as well.
No, exactly, and these are two you know, managers and people, I guess, who've kind of harnessed the emotional side of football better than most throughout their career. I think, you know, Gerrard in a different way, and Klopp in another way, where, you know, we talk about the baggage in terms of the history of this club and how it can be intimidating, and it has been intimidating for players and managers of the past, but they sort of harnessed that. You know, we talk about European nights, they knew that was a thing, they knew that they could bring that out again within this club and within the fan base, and they've used that as a positive rather than something to bag them down. And it's the same thing with Steven. You know, you just think, you know, he's one where now he's in a situation where he does have to kind of switch that off, and we're allowed to be sentimental with him when he comes at the beginning, like we've all said, and give him the ovation, because you can't forget the moments, you can't forget everything that's attached with him and this club. You know, a large part of the history is tied to him, so it will be there. But these are both coaches and both people that I think are good at distinguishing the line when it becomes as a positive and then when it becomes a negative.
Yeah, and Phil talks about sort of harnessing that atmosphere there, Ian, and I think that's a dead interesting point. One of the things that sticks out the most to me from the press conferences is this quote from Jurgen Klopp. He said, "There is sentiment, we love Steven, but we will go with all we have, sing songs, give him the best reception ever, before and after, but during the 95 minutes, we need everyone behind us." And that about sums it up for me, because Liverpool can create, you know, an atmosphere for Steven Gerrard, they can show their appreciation to Steven Gerrard, but then that atmosphere has to lean into during the 90 minutes we get behind our lads.
100%. I mean, we are in a title race. Let's get it right, you know what I mean? So if this was maybe the last game of the season and there was nothing riding on it, then you may see a kind of different atmosphere. But it's all about the 3 points, Josh. And I think, you know, we're about to enter a really, really busy period. This Liverpool team under Jürgen Klopp feels primed for these festive periods now. He's almost got his conditioned to the point where when these games arrive in close proximity, we're really, really kind of, I say, we're really developed for them. And we've seen some of our best results in recent years over our festive period. I've got no reason to think it won't be the same this time round. You know, if you think about what's gone on since that West Ham defeat, there's been 6 victories, Liverpool. And I think sometimes it's easy, isn't it? After a defeat, you kind of almost think, you know, the world's ending and stuff, and then you go and put 6 wins together like that, 4 in the league, 2 in the Champions League. And the Champions League ones have been impressive because there's been nothing essentially riding on them, but yet there's still almost that desire to go out and kind of claim the 3 points and stuff. And I can't wait for tomorrow, and it's nothing to do with Steven Gerrard going back to Anfield, to be honest. Whilst it's great to see him get a job in the Premier League, and I think it's important for him in terms of development, if he's going to have any hopes of managing Liverpool Football Club. Klopp talks about maybe he hasn't got to win any trophies. Maybe that is a thing, but he's going to have to get Villa really, really competitive and get them right up the league to the point where they're probably challenging in around the top 6, maybe pushing for 4th, maybe he picks up a cup along the way. But I hope it's a long way off because we want this manager to stay. You know, we really do. And if he does go in the next 2 or 3 years, then maybe Gerrard is a candidate. But again, back to the no sentiment thing, you can't be handing this job out to anyone. Just because they're a name, exactly. It's got to be the best person with the best credentials who gets this role, whenever that may be. But tomorrow is huge. And I think, you know, it's the league starting to take a little bit of shape now. We knew the top 3 would be the top 3, but there's a bit of a gap. I know West Ham get the win last week, but there's still a gap, not only in points, but in quality as well. And it's really, really important that Liverpool keep the foot down tomorrow.
Yeah, Sean, obviously we've talked throughout this about just how good this team is, and one of Liverpool's leading lights, particularly during this recent run, or the lighthouse, as Pep Linders calls him, is obviously Fabinho. And I loved, like you said before, about Jürgen Klopp sort of thanking the journalists for asking that question, because it felt like a bit of a break from the sort of Steven Gerrard. But the question in itself was quite strange, really, because he was being asked, Klopp, whether he thinks that Fabinho is underrated. And I loved his response. He was basically just like, I'll ask his teammates if they think he's underrated, because I think that's a big thing in this Liverpool team in particular, because there are so many stars. There sort of needs to be, like, you know, not an outside perception for some of the players, and I think Fabinho is one of those lads who strikes me as he's happy to just get on with his job and let all the other lads take the limelight.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of talk about who the most important player in our team is, and, you know, straight away you think Van Dijk, Salah, you know, the goalie, but there's a lot to be said for Fabinho. Mm-hmm. I mean, just look at last year. He went to centre half and he was great when he was there, but without him in midfield, we didn't have a midfield, really. I know there was other people missing, but the second he went back into midfield, we started winning games again. It's no coincidence for me that, you know, when he does drop back, that we lose all those games in a row, and not because he's playing at the back, just because he's not in midfield, where he basically runs the games for us. You know, he's like a magnet to the ball sometimes. Honestly, I'm sitting there watching him some games thinking, how's he getting that? And he just gets every single one.
Go gadget legs.
Yeah, exactly. So listen, underrated, you know, I think Klopp was surprised when they said that to him, and I'm half surprised hearing that now, because for me, everyone you speak to, particularly around Liverpool, knows how important he is. And for me, there's an argument to say he is our most important player.
Yeah, and Fuad as well, Jürgen Klopp sort of says it within his quote about this, and the idea that, you know, Fabinho probably doesn't need people from outside to be perceiving him any kind of way, because his teammates give him that credit. And also, I think, you know, when this Liverpool team does sort of gets dismantled in the future and we look back on its legacy, Fabinho will be an absolutely massive part of that. And we want this midfield at the moment that we've got with Thiago, him and Henderson to keep going, but actually he's probably one of the most important to that in terms of, you know, getting him on the pitch week in, week out, because he's been so crucial to the success of this side.
Definitely. I mean, we always talk about the spine of this Liverpool team, don't we? And each one of those are equally as important. I don't think you can say, you know, the centre halves are more important than the midfield. And I think with Fabinho, you get the impression from some of the quotes today from Klopp that, you know, he's also one of those where he sets the standards in training. He's got that kind of thing about him where he's just constantly on it and at such a high level, both, you know, off the pitch and on the pitch. And I've said it before on these shows that, you know, playing midfield for Liverpool is really, really hard. And it's really, you can be made to look really silly quite easily as well. And for him to put in the consistency over the last, what, six games, seven games, is brilliant, because there have been some tough games home and away. And he seems to be at a point where he, and maybe it's, you know, the partnership and the people around him getting the right blend is really important, but he just seems to be in the right place now all the time. And there's that clip going around up from Wolves, isn't there, of him and Thiago basically shutting down Traore and making those two tackles. And that's what we're seeing all the time now, that opposition are just not getting out. And he's just been right at the pinnacle of all of that. And I saw, you know, Gary Neville did a thing, didn't he, on Rodri the other day, and saying he's probably the best six in the world. And there's, you know, loads of arguments for that. And he has been brilliant this season. But Fabinho's right up there. Fabinho, the things that he's asked to do, very different to Rodri. And the things that he's sort of managing to do and drag this Liverpool midfield up has been brilliant over the last few weeks.
Yeah, and Ian, we obviously acknowledge that the personal accolades are important to these players. I think you see it with Mo Salah and sort of, you know, his reaction to coming seventh in the Ballon d'Or, and his reaction in general when he probably doesn't receive the personal accolade that he thinks he should receive. But Fabinho strikes me as one of those lads who just sort of knows his role, and his role in the team is probably a little more on the understated side, but it's not understated to us as Liverpool fans. You know, Fabinho is held in about as high a regard as it gets, and, you know, Shaw mentions it there. When you go through a list of Liverpool players and their importance, he's absolutely right up there.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you'll remember this when we signed him. We were on our way back from Kiev, weren't we?
Yep.
And that signing just kind of turned the kind of night on its head a little bit. We were all a bit down, obviously, given what had happened. Then next minute, it was just fucking carnage because we'd signed this fella, and some of us hadn't even heard of him. Do you know what I mean? But obviously, I had. Yeah.
It'd been nice if we made it to Prague, I will say.
But no, we'd obviously seen little bits of him, and obviously played for Monaco against Man City and stuff. And we knew, I think, we were getting a good footballer. I'm not sure any of us quite knew how good he was. And, you know, what the lads have said there is spot on. You could absolutely say he is, without doubt, one of the most important players. And we've got lots of players you'd put in the world-class bracket, and he's also in there. I think the Rodri comparison that Neville did was interesting. I think Rodri has had a good season, yeah. But I wouldn't swap Fabinho for anyone. And it's not just I don't think it's just a Liverpool bias thing, a player. I just think he's that much better than all of the other kind of people he'd put in that number six bracket. I think the only time you ever see any weakness for Fabinho is probably when he's come back from injury and he maybe takes a game or two just to get back to his normal level. And there's lots of footballers who have similar problems when they're coming back from little injuries. But normally, week to week, he is one of the lads who you can say you can absolutely rely on him. And I think, you know, it's really important that kind of partnership he's forging with Thiago. I think you saw it towards the end of last season. It really blossomed. They complement each other so well. You know, good footballers invariably do complement each other, and they do massively. And I thought, you know, the performance last week against Wolves was just another one to add to the list, where them together in the midfield, it gives you so much, not only defensively, and we know Thiago can do little bits defensively as well. That part of his game is maybe slightly underrated, but he obviously can do quite a lot going forward. And don't forget, you know, Fabinho's also got a pass in his locker where he can just drop it over someone's head. We've seen him do that in the past. You know, Man United springs to mind at Anfield where he just drops it over someone's head. What a footballer. And as I say, another one who we've managed to tie down. There's one or two more to still tie down, but he's been brilliant for us, Josh, since he come in.
Absolutely, yeah, and we're hoping he'll be one of the first names on the team sheet this Saturday as well. But first, I'm going to hand you over now to the opposition view before we come back to talk about team selections.
I'm with Ben Anderson to talk about Aston Villa, or as they are now corporately called, Steven Gerrard's Aston Villa, whether or not anyone likes it or not. The one thing I would say, Ben, was we've been speaking about Villa, well, for a long period of time, but over the course of this season, the thing you've kept saying when you've been coming onto our shows has been about we've got to defend better. That everything Villa does that's good always stems from defensive stability first and foremost. And it's what Dean Smith did back in the Championship and then brought the side up. And it's what he did post-COVID, was that there was huge amounts of defensive stability. The first thing that Steven Gerrard looks to have done, with the exception of a crazy first half against Leicester, is introduce a ton of defensive stability to Aston Villa.
Yeah, I mean, we're still conceding. We've only had one clean sheet under Gerrard so far. That was his first game against Brighton. But you know what? We're not letting too many in. You know, one goal against Leicester, two against Man City, one from Crystal Palace. Yeah, the defensive stability seems to be there. And you know what? Thank God for Ashley Young, because Matt Target's out at the moment. Target has not been having a great season anyway, I don't think personally. And I'd prefer to see Ashley Young starting on that left-back position all the time. But Young, thank God he can play right wing. He can play in the centre of the park. He can play left-back. Yeah, I think we're looking really good, solid. And of course, we've got the sixth best goalkeeper in the world between the sticks at Villa Park as well, which always helps. I'll tell you what, he's been having a good few weeks, to be fair to him.
He has been having a good few weeks. He seems to have come back alive. The other thing I noticed in the Leicester game, which I did watch, was that whether or not Brendan Rodgers has a bad half-time, Steven Gerrard and Aston Villa have a really good half-time. It was night and day, the two performances. The intensity ratcheted right up second half from Villa. And listen, Leicester should have been over the hill and far away, if we're all honest about it, even with the disallowed goal. They had chance after chance after chance after chance. But then second half, they barely get a kick. And that to me suggests that you know, that it's a good unit first and foremost. This is a team that's actually been through a fair bit together, and that shouldn't be underestimated. But they really, I thought, they really sorted themselves out.
Yeah, well, Gerrard said after the game that he wants to see the second half performance without him having to get into their ribs at half time, I think was his exact phrase. I think he's come in and there's a lot of reports about how he's not standoffish, but he's not an arm round manager. You know, he's definitely making the players play for him. And I think, you know, when he, a bloke like Gerrard, the career that he had, you know, he's been there, he's done that, and he's not someone who's talking the talk. He's walked the walk. And I think the players respect that. And you saw that in the second half because, yeah, we talked about defensive stability for Villa as well. But we talked loads about, you know, I've watched so many Villa performances and I liked Dean Smith. I'm going to say that. I like the man. I think he did a great job for Villa. I was sad when he went. When Stevie's name came up, I thought, all right, that's probably the best replacement we could have had for him. But there were times when we just looked a bit lackluster. And actually, what Steven Gerrard's brought to the team is a bit of grit and a bit of determination. And yes, solidly as a team, but also individual performances. We're seeing players come alive who haven't been alive for a long time. Ollie Watkins, for example, for so long, he looked great on the ball, but he wasn't finishing. Now he's got, you know, up for goal of the month, which is great. And I just feel like Steven Gerrard is bringing it. It's a play for me or get off the pitch. You know, he's not worried. He's not coming in, and he's not pussyfooting around. You know, he's here to make changes and to get Villa higher up the table. And I think the players are responding well to it. It's great. What a great time to be a Villa fan at the moment.
Well, the other part of this as well is I noticed against Leicester, and especially in that second half, was how robust he's made that midfield three. So it's Nakamba he's got currently playing through the middle for him, very much there to break things up, win his battles. Luiz and McGinn are both accepted as being really good footballers, but they're also absolute scrappers as well. They love a tackle, they love a battle, and that's something Liverpool are going to have to be prepared for. I think Luiz and McGinn and Nakamba is about as robust as a centre midfield three as I think you'll see outside the top six in the Premier League.
Do you think?
The point is, like, you can play Luiz six. McGinn's a big footballer who puts himself about. You know, he's a physical presence. It's not the idea that they're any. You know, I don't think that they're not gonna. You know, they're not gonna skew you. They're not gonna outwit you. But they could outbattle a lot of teams, I think.
Yeah, I think Nakamba's the weakest one out of that. To be honest, having said that, he's had a good few weeks under Steven Gerrard, so maybe he's one of those players who's been, you know, re-energized by Steven Gerrard coming in. But I do like that as a core because you've got Nakamba in the middle and then Doug and McGinn are flanking him. And it means that they can kind of push up a little bit as well because John McGinn, his consistency is unbelievable. Every game, he has a good game, John McGinn. And I love seeing him push up and, you know, he'll take that cheeky shot and he'll make the defence feel a little bit on the back foot and you never quite know where he's going to go and what he's going to do. And so to have that kind of solid three in the middle, I also have to say, I really like seeing Watkins start up front. Obviously, Ings is out at the moment. It's going to be interesting when Ings comes back to see what Gerrard does, because that has been the big debate with Villa all through the season. What formation do we play? How many attackers do we have on the pitch? I've got to say, credit to young Jacob Ramsey as well. You know, he's having that kind of solid midfield of the three you're talking about means that Buendia on the right and Ramsey on the left, they are roaming a bit more and they are just being a bit cheekier and they're just getting stuck in. I mean, I don't know what you think. I think it was a goal.
I think if it isn't a goal, it should be one. I think it's one of those where the rules don't help the footballers. That's my sort of thing. I think the rules don't help the footballers on ones like that. But if it isn't a goal, it should be one. You mentioned there Buendia as well. It looks as though he's, as you said before, he's beginning to enjoy himself a little bit in there too. Konsa obviously nets a couple of times and he's a constant threat. It is a Villa team with threats everywhere. Like, Liverpool should not be complacent about Saturday, should they?
I don't think so. And I wouldn't have said that a few months ago. I think the other thing that, you know, what's great about Villa at the moment, I think Liverpool are a team that's set up to do this and they'll do this well, but it's the set pieces, the threat from set pieces from Villa at the moment. I mean, we've got a set piece coach and we're all joking about that a few weeks back. We haven't scored any goals from set pieces for a good few months, but it seems to be working and it's great to have those, you know, Mings and Konsa tough at the back and a great partnership there. But also they love getting up and from our set piece play, there's definitely a threat there at Anfield on the weekend too.
Give me a prediction.
I think Liverpool are going to win it. I think Liverpool are unstoppable. But like, you know, I think it'd be a very similar kind of conversation after the Villa Man City game where they beat us 2-1. But you know what? We played well and we played with heart. And I think that'll be exactly the same Villa team you see at the weekend.
Yeah, nice one to Ben there. In terms of a team for this one, Sean, we'll start with the defence. I'm expecting it to be pretty much the same as Wolves. I think you could say that probably throughout the team, but in terms of defence, I think it's important now that we get a bit of that consistency. And, you know, Joel Matip has been probably Virgil van Dijk's favourite partner. I think it's fair to say, obviously, him and Joe Gomez had a bit of a bromance off the pitch, but I think in terms of, you know, actual playing, Joel Matip is probably the number one option. And given Gomez's recent injuries as well, he would be the one you'd probably keep him for this one.
Yeah, definitely. You know, as Ian said before, we're in a title race here. So you've got, and listen, we benefited from winning all our Champions League group games, certainly up until the Milan point and getting through early, so we could rest players in the week. So I think it's just natural that you revert back to pretty much the same team that played against Wolves, with the exception of one or two. Maybe you've got a knock or injuries or stuff. I know Jota has potentially got a knock there. So for me, yeah, I mean, yes for Matip, I think that's a no-brainer. And the rest of the team, for me, is pretty much similar to Wolves.
Yeah, Phil, I wonder whether he's got a bit of a thing around Gomez now. Obviously, he's got to manage him coming back from injury, but he doesn't play in the week. Obviously, he plays Nat Phillips and Konate. But, you know, we hear today that Nat Phillips has fractured his cheekbone, which is obviously a bit of a blow if he wanted to leave Liverpool in January, but also a blow to Liverpool if Joe Gomez is not quite near to fitness, because it means you're now relying on Konate as sort of the backup centre-half to those two, and you don't have the second option to go to. So you'd sort of wonder whether there is a bit of a managing Gomez's game time to get him back up to speed. But I mean, for this one, it does just feel like the no-brainer to be throwing Joel Matip in there again.
Oh yeah, 100%. And you know, to be honest, he's probably been the standout centre-half for us. I think most of this season he's been absolutely brilliant, and maybe slightly, you know, underrated looking from the outside in. But yeah, no, Joe Gomez is interesting, isn't it? Because it feels like he's just constantly had these little niggles and these little knockbacks just at the wrong time, when you thought, you know, the Milan game would have been perfect for him, wouldn't it, to get some minutes. And also a bit of confidence from the manager as well, because I do feel like he's sort of gone a little bit, you know, amiss in terms of being in the conversation as much as he used to be. And that's something important, I think, with the squad. We talk about injuries and everything, but when everyone is fit, as it does seem to be in those positions, it can be tough, because you want to keep them happy. And, you know, we can't forget what he's done in the past. He's been brilliant. That run he went on with Van Dijk in the team a couple of seasons ago, you know, he was absolutely brilliant, probably one of the best centre-halves in the country at that point. So, yeah, it is about getting him back. This Christmas period is difficult, though, because there's no chance really to give people rhythm, in the sense of, you know, the results are really important. Each game's really important. But also any little setbacks in terms of injuries, you're missing loads of games in a short period of time. So, yeah, I would look to go unchanged in the defence from that Wolves game.
I think that the thing about Gomez as well, you know, we've got to remember he's still really young.
Yeah.
For a centre-half, and I think Klopp's aware of that as well, because, you know, it's gone through my mind, you know, especially when you had Nat Phillips there the other day, why isn't Gomez there? And we know he picks up knocks and stuff, but listen, Gomez is one for the next 5-6 years, do you know what I mean? I think what is he, 24 or something like that?
Well, he's like a couple of months younger than Nat Phillips, isn't he? Which is always like the one that catches me out. Just think that
couple
Phillips
of months,
like a kid,
looked like a couple of years.
Either the defence was a bit mad for the Porto game, but I thought it worked quite well in the sense of, you know, dealing with the threat that Milan were offering, which albeit wasn't much of one, but I think particularly the fullbacks Nico Williams and Costa Simikas did their chance to get in game time absolutely no harm. But I think, you know, as we keep saying throughout this, we are in a title race, and these games feel so important. This one on Saturday feels so important, and it would be, you know, some decision from the manager to look past Andy Robertson and Trent for this one.
Yeah, no, they've got to play. I think Costas has done really well. And I loved his little kind of, you know, cameo from the bench where he was dancing around at Wolves. I mean, it just showed the kind of togetherness that's in the squad. And the manager deserves all the credit for that, because he's obviously fostering that along with some of the other senior players. And he has done great when he's come in. But I think Robbo in recent games has just reminded everyone that he is world-class and that he is the best left-back at the club. I think you go exactly the same as what we went against Wolves if everyone's available. I wouldn't change it. I think there are opportunities against Newcastle and against Leicester in the League Cup where you can flex the squad a little bit. I think the Newcastle one on Thursday, you know, they're not in particularly great form after. I know they've obviously got the win now against Burnley, but they're not a great side. And I think you wouldn't be making wholesale changes in that game, don't get me wrong, but you have got the ability to maybe bring in 3 or 4 and just kind of tweak it a little bit with the kind of Christmas period coming up. But then you've got the Spurs game on the horizon. Now, I'm assuming that will go ahead, but there probably is some doubt over that, given the game against Brighton's off. So I want to see the same team, Josh, and I think, you know, they've got rhythm now. And I think sometimes you can actually you'd actually play people out of rhythm by giving them too much rest. You've seen it with this Liverpool team where people have gone, well, I've had 10 days break and they've come back and actually it hasn't gone particularly well. Yeah. So I think I'm fine just to see the same lads go again. I don't expect any massive changes. I think there are one or two who are really kind of pushing. You know, Oxlade-Chamberlain's done well in recent weeks and I think there'll be opportunities for him possibly on the Thursday. But also, you know, if Liverpool can get some of these games wrapped up, kind of 70-75, there's chances for lads to come on, like Joe Gomez, and just get a few more minutes. Yep. There's talk of him going out on loan. I don't want to see any of that. No. We can't be leaving ourselves short at centre-half again. And I understand he probably needs a little bit of rhythm, but I think there's enough games where someone like Joe Gomez can play the Leicester game. He maybe can get some minutes at Newcastle, even if it's only the last 20 or half an hour, and just start to build his fitness. It's really difficult on the back of an injury where he's had loads of them and then he's had another serious one, and you often see it where players come back and they'll just pick up little niggles all over the place. Van Dijk's probably been a little bit of an exception to the rule. He saw it with Laporte, who came back for City a little bit too quick, and he's just picking up niggle after niggle. And you know, you feel so sorry for Gomez, because I do think when he's back to his best, he is without a doubt one of the top centre-halves in the league. That season that Ferd was referencing where Van Dijk and him had that partnership, I wouldn't have swapped him for anyone. He was that good. It's easy to forget the level that Joe Gomez got to. He was without doubt at that time the best young centre-half in European football, in world football, no question about it. He was brilliant. There was times when, you know, Van Dijk was the number one, no doubt about it, but there were games when Joe Gomez was even outperforming Van Dijk in certain games. I think about Leicester away, where Alisson makes the mistake that day. Joe Gomez is immense. He was brilliant on the cover. His recovery pace was just superb. So that is a centre-half that Liverpool need to keep hold of, they need to look after, and I've no doubt that they can get him back to his best. You have that little kind of worry in the back of your mind about how many injuries he's had, but you just hope that you know, we can get somewhere close to his best, because what a player when he is.
Yeah, Sean, we mentioned before about making sure we get that midfield, the one which obviously starts the Wolves game on the pitch as much as possible, and I imagine that would be the case again. But, you know, Ian referenced it there, the potential for fitness issues going to this one, and Jurgen Klopp addressed a few of them, and it seems like there's still potentially a bit of a doubt around Jota. He said he could train today, but he's not trained yet this week. Divock Origi was given an extra rest day, and Ian mentioned about lads who were knocking down the door. I don't know what more Divock Origi could be doing at the moment. if Diogo Jota's going to be out for this one, then you wouldn't mind falling back on Divock at the moment, would you?
Listen, Divock plays on all this, doesn't he? So get him in the team, he'll probably score an hat-trick. But, but yeah, I agree with Ian, to be honest. If Josh is fit, he has to play. Yeah. You have to go with that from free, because they've been brilliant for us. I know he missed a sitter against Wolves, but look, that happens at the end of the day. For all the goals he scored, I think we can allow him that one, particularly as we won the game in the end. So yeah, for me, Josh has got to come back in, and I see that Firmino is back in training.
Yeah.
And I think that's only a good thing coming into this period that we're coming into. If we can get to 70-75, as Ian says there again, you know, with the game wrapped up, which, touch wood, you know, we can do, then I'd like to see Firmino come on, because I think I don't think you can underestimate how important he is to this team. And I know we've been brilliant for the last six games whilst he's been out, but I think, you know, bringing him back into the fold just makes us that much more formidable for me.
Yeah, Phil, just when you think you're out with Divock, he does something to pull you back in. Like, I wouldn't mind him starting this game at all. I think, you know, I agree with Sean and Ian. If the chance is there to get all the lads on, if they're all fully fit, and if Diogo Jota's fully fit, then I think it's a no-brainer. But, I mean, I wouldn't mind more Divock action.
No, I'm never going to say no to that. To be honest, it brings in a wider thing, doesn't it, with the squad. And, you know, we talked about earlier how, you know, Liverpool seem to have, the last couple of seasons, really figured out how to get into the best shape going into this period. But this is the first time in a while where it feels like the whole squad is purring, that there's options that you would be really comfortable coming in. And that gives him a chance to make changes within the games, but also the odd one here and there. You know, if Tsimikas started tomorrow, none of us would have any questions, really, would we? We'd all be fine with it. There'd be no problem there. So it's really good to be in that shape. And Divock's just another one of those options, isn't he, where, you know, he scored 2-2 games. You can't ask for more than that. Chamberlain's another one where, I wouldn't be against it if I saw him in the starting lineup tomorrow. You know, that these are all guys who've got the minutes, and they look like they're in rhythm. So it's a great place to be in, and if it is Divock tomorrow, then bring it on.
Yeah, Ian, we started off the show talking about sentiment, and I think there's been maybe an argument in the past that Divock is one of those players who's been given more than enough sentiment. But I think, you know, it's during these spells where Divock proves what he truly is, and I've loved everything that Jurgen Klopp has said about him recently, because, you know, he's obviously got him with that sentiment and called him the Liverpool legend and said all these things. But, you know, I think Pep Linder said it in a press conference of the week, Divock Origi is a world-class finisher, and he's still got, you know, so many good attributes for this Liverpool side, and honestly, if Diogo Jota isn't fit, then you wouldn't mind seeing Divock again.
I mean, fair play to the lad, because I think I'd probably, and I don't think I'd be alone in this, I think lots of us would have written him off, because yep. there was times where, and again, you know, your mind can play tricks a little bit, but there were a lot of times in recent kind of months where he was coming in and people would maybe just head down, kind of shrug their shoulders and think, Divock. But, you know, some of that maybe was down to the fact he was getting played out wide a lot of the times, and that didn't really lend itself to his game. And I have to say, he looks a man now who just looks completely focused on the job in hand. I thought he was great in Milan. And someone put his goals out, I think it was yesterday, just on Twitter, and you forget just how many great finishes he's got. I mean, that point about being a fantastic finisher and one of the best at the club, you know, it isn't wrong, because when you look at some of those goals, you know, the one against Everton where he just pulls it out the sky, I think Lovren plays the ball, and it's unbelievable. But there's probably 10 or 12 that are just world-class finishes, maybe more. You know, the Barcelona one, it's far harder than people probably give it credit for. But there's loads where it's just a brilliant finish. And there's not many players at the club who can probably execute some of the finishes that I'm talking about. I think there are times when he'll frustrate, and I think, you know, you've almost got to accept that a little bit. I would still go with the front three that we've talked about, because I think Villa, and people will know that I'm not a huge fan of Tyrone Mings, but I just think he's an accident waiting to happen. And that's not saying he can't have a good game tomorrow, because of course he can. But I think if you get players like Jota and Salah around him, I think there's loads of potential for Liverpool just to take fucking all kinds, because I think he's just one of those fellas who looks like he's going to put a rash tackle in, or he's going to do something silly, or he's going to kind of overplay the ball, something like that. I think Divock is perfectly set up for Newcastle at home, because I think they look like a bag of shite at the back, and I think Divock's physical presence, I don't think they want any part of that. So I think if you can save Divock for Thursday, you wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, slot a couple of goals. But I think if we can get Salah and Jota and Mane in and around that Villa back four, then there's possibilities for Liverpool. Don't get me wrong, I think one thing Gerrard has done, he's improved them defensively. Yep. He did it at Rangers, and he's done it at Villa. And I didn't see any of the City game because it clashed with the Liverpool game, but I saw the highlights, and even in that second half you could see he'd made massive strides compared to what he'd seen in the first half. So he's clearly a fella who's able to go in and change things at half time. I think we've all been impressed with what he's done at Rangers. But even in a short time at Villa, three wins out of four, you can't really knock that. So whilst we're talking about games being wrapped up, and listen, this Liverpool team can take anyone apart, I do think it'll be a tough test on Saturday.
Yeah, tough test. We'll round off with score predictions, and Sean, I'll come to you first. Your score prediction for the game?
Yeah, I mean, don't really like doing predictions, so I'm just going to say that one more than them will do me.
Do what?
Go for a nervy 2-1 for some reason. Maybe because I'm ill. I'm feeling down. You know?
I was going to say 2-1. I'll go 3-1. I'll go 3-1.
It'll be tough.
A late third. Yeah. A late third.
Everyone who listens to the show knows I'm not a shithouse. And since all my guests have been shithouse with their score predictions there, I'll go for a Liverpool 3-0. Because why not? Because there'll be sentiment attached to this one. But as Ian said, these Reds can take absolutely anybody and any kind of sentiment apart and win the game. Sports Social Podcast Network.